Hello, this is PJ in the Lucy Coleman studio. It's the 13th of October. Okay, people are pinging me. Here's a nice message. It says right here from one of the brothers, Reggie. Okay, I will. I was about to text you to say I love you today and forever. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Then my daughter's talking to me. And what a wonderful, wonderful day in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining me for the webcast today. I was looking at something on one of the news medias, and I see that there was another beating at Dodger Stadium. You know, the Mets clobbered the Dodgers last night in the stadium. I'm just setting up the studio here. And there was an attack at Dodger Stadium. The LAPD is investigating a Friday night that left a man hospitalized with serious injuries after the NLDS player opener, National League, I guess, opener. The fight, which occurred in the stadium parking lot, resulted in the victim having a portion of his skull removed and has some fans drawing comparisons to the 2011 attack on the Giants fan, Brian Shaw. One person wrote and says, "Don't judge us Dodger fans for the actions of some classless losers." Another Dodger fan said, "Embarrassed, just embarrassed." Another person said, I guess there's a stream of comments, "This is pathetic. I feel ashamed to be a Dodger fan when my fellow fans are doing ridiculous actions like this. I was at the game on Friday night, and the Mets fan were being rowdy throughout the whole game, but that is just a fan being a fan." Yeah, see, I saw that because they had a lot of Mets fan in the stadium, and they have a right to do that. Then somebody said, "This is why LA don't have a football team." Then somebody else said, "Freaking losers who committed this cowardly act. These thugs are not Dodger fans. These are an embarrassment to the Dodgers and to the city of L.A. I agree with that. I like that, Jose. Then Roger writes and says, "If you feel a need to defend your team with violence, you miss the point of sports." But, you know, I want to say something about that. No, not, because sports is violence. It is very violent. And if you don't know it, then you're living under a dreamscape. I want to talk a little bit about the so-called Million Man March. I didn't go too well in terms of the media, but I just have one comment about that. When you say justice or else, that's a threat. That's not only a threat to the powers that be, and the powers that be don't like that kind of language, so they're going to marginalize you. But in terms of, I read one comment. If there was a shooting in Baltimore or Ferguson, if there was a choking of a policeman, of a teenage boy, a girl, you'd have all the media there with cameras and everything. But here's one event in the nation's capital when you have thousands, I don't know what the count really was, that's not important. When you have 10 black men meeting to be positive, and man, wasn't that great? Not one fight, no muggings in Washington, D.C. that day, no violence, no riot police, nothing. 5 would get you 10, I don't know, I have to check the stats. But I bet you the mall grounds were clean as a whistle when those brothers left. because the kind of brothers that went to that march are conscious brothers. I disagree with Mr. Farrakhan's tactics, but I do not disagree with his energy. Okay? How do I think he should do it? I don't have the slightest idea to wake people up. We're living on a dying planet, and we are instrumentally involved in killing it. And I believe that when someone like Mr. Louis Farrakhan puts these things together and organizes it, it's a shot in the arm for the black community. All right? It is. And anything that can bring people together, all kind of brothers coming together, and something to strengthen us and not to separate us. We live in a world that's been used to separating us for years. And what we need to do is we need to come to the point of not allowing people to do that to us. Oh, and I want to say to all my friends that's been contacting me on my social network, okay, to thank you. Let me take this opportunity to thank you. I've been busy. As a matter of fact, I've collected papers from the college yesterday to grade, so I will be grading papers for the rest of the week, and I'm going to try to get all three classes' papers graded and done by this weekend. So it's going to be a grading papers weekend for me, and I'm looking forward to doing that. You know, there's some of my friends have been putting there's a lot of articles out. Black Beverly Hills debates historic status versus white gentrification, because there is, see, some of the talk on my social network this morning. Listen to this article. Longtime residents of View Park. Now, you have to understand, View Park is a very popular part of Los Angeles. View Park. Longtime residents of View Park have a thinly veiled code for the signs of change that they see in their upscale neighborhood joggers and dog walkers. It's like an alien sighing, says Mrs. Martin, who grew up in this hilltop community, namely by La Brea Avenue and Crenshaw Boulevard. We never saw them before, quote unquote. That's right, there's a lot of white folk moving back into the Crenshaw area over here, with the trains being built, and the real estate is so expensive in this darn town that when they can move in my neighborhood and buy a house for about $250,000 and build it up and gentrify it and buy a little mini coupe like I have. See, I used to drive a Lexus luxury car. Now I drive a mini coupe. And I'm telling you, I just got my tax bill for the year. I'm still riding in the low. I'm not even paying $1,000 a year for taxes. See, because I was smart. I bought my house under Proposition 13, the Gaines Initiative, way back in 1972. And when that thing came out in the 70s, it protected me. I'm not ever moving out this house. My goodness. Listen to this. Residents of View Park, with its curving palm-lined streets, stunning views, and movie star quality homes, have for decades fought any proposal that they thought threatened their neighborhood's special qualities, including the solid sense of African-American identity. That's right. Now a move that strikes many as an allocate an effort to put View Park on the National Register of Historic Places has blown up into a particularly contentious fight. And you know, I didn't know that this fight was taking place, but it is right in my own neighborhood. And that's what they're blocking about, you know, talking about this stuff. Some residents covet this honor of a community whose proud past, my goodness, is a part of what makes it feel like home. Others fear that the designation is a ploy to lure in white buyers who can no longer afford to turn up their noses at black neighborhoods now that Westside Real Estate has gone through the roof. And it has. Westside Real Estate, you cannot. And you know who these people are that's moving in over here? They're the up-and-coming young whites, people that are in the industry, the movie industry, computers, and all this high-tech stuff. And, hey, great little neighbors. Well, you know, listen to this. Tammy Williams, for example, practically radiates community pride, but opposes the historic designation. She graduated from Cal State Dominguez, like me, married into a moneyed family, bought a starter home in 2003, finally worked her way up in the area called the Black Beverly Hills. When she moved into her 4,000 square foot mid-century modern on a spacious corner lot, the woman who sponsored her as a teenager proclaimed, "You have arrived." I'm sorry, I'm trying to read this and look at this. Later, Williams said that she and her friend stood on a new neighbor's patio feeling like the Huxtables as they bathed in the downtown skyscraper's evening glow. "We've made it," Williams whooped. And, you know, I think about that because I have a friend of mine. He passed away a couple of years ago, Beaver. And he used to come by the church that I pastored. And he and his wife were beautiful, beautiful singers in the church. And Beaver and I had a rock and roll group back in the 60s called the Four Speeds, you know, on a record player, 78, 45, 33, and 16. It was me, Beaver, Richie Baby, and Ross, my brother. And that was our singing group back in the 60s. Well, he and his lovely wife, Dorothy, had bought a beautiful home up in View Park, our lower Baldwin Hills. Beautiful. And from his piano living room, you can look out the window and see downtown Los Angeles. I mean, that's, hey man, that's the area that they're talking about here. Man, this is some of the most expensive real estate that you would ever see. Okay. Everybody's tagging me, I guess. This is beautiful as I read this article, though, because it really brings it home. I had never thought about View Park is hardly alone in its identity crisis. They're saying in this article, from Washington, D.C. to Oakland, working class neighborhoods have been strongholds for blacks and becoming increasingly diverse as people shun the suburbs of convenience for the convenience of city living, says Derek Hamilton, associate professor of urban policy at the New School in Manhattan. See, I'm too old. I don't know that these things are taking place. I'm so involved with working with people just trying to, you know, find a stable here, because there's some people in the urban communities here, and I see what's happening with all this new gentrification. They can swiftly move someone out of a neighborhood, and the whole neighborhood has a change face menu. But I think neighborhoods and communities have to come together. I think they speak about it here. He says, some fell behind on payments, talking about how some of the people have lost their homes. Let me read back up here. It's a great little article. It says, some use the equity of their homes as a down payment on other middle class dreams, such as business ventures, private schooling, and investment properties. Some fell behind on the payments of their homes, ended up in foreclosure. And this occurred much more frequently in black communities, said Lance Freeman, a professor of urban planning at Columbia University. There goes the hood, he says, views the gentrification from the ground up. There goes the hood. Yeah, well, says, according to a recent Zillow study, blacks are denied home loans at twice the rate of whites. And it is more likely that banks, flippers, and non-African-American buyers will grab these foreclosed properties. Now, this is very, very true. And I'm talking about this because, you know, as I see my neighborhood changing, everything around me changing, the city changing, you know, it makes a person like myself, if there's any of you seniors still listening to me, it makes you think about the investments that you've made over the years. That's why I went into a kind of a thing that I went into, because I was thinking about survival by not making or generating money, because I don't have the ability to generate money anymore. I'm almost on a senior citizen's fixed income kind of thing. I don't generate money. I don't know how. You have to be in the 30s and 40s to generate money. You're not going to be in your 70s generating money. You're just not. Hopefully you had a nice era, what do they call it, IRA or something like that. Well, remember, I was a pastor in the church, and these people didn't give me a decent retirement. Never had a decent retirement. I was a Baptist pastor, Baptist minister. You know what that, back in the day, the people were to take care of their religious leader. They took care of their shepherd. They paid him a decent salary as he continuously brought them the word of God, and they took care of his life in the very same way that the Jews took care of the Levitical tribe. And so we have this kind of thing going on. So when I'm coming up in here, I'm saying, no, I'm strong. I'm happy. I expected my wife to outlive me, and I was supposed to die first. Well, cosmic killjoy. God had it different. I'm still here. I had to immediately go into a rush to say, how am I going to survive over 65 if I'm still healthy and strong enough to make it? Because I am still healthy. Went to visit my doctor on Friday. He told me I'm in the best shape he's ever seen me in. What the heck is going on? There goes the hood. I'm not concerned about the hood. I remember I had a neighbor. He's dead now. When the Hispanics started moving in, he was outraged. I told him to get a life. You know what I told Leo before he died? I said, this was Mexico far longer than it became the gringo land. And so you might as well get used to that. Get used to the flavors and the smells and everything that's coming up from Los Angeles, for it is a Latina city. And if you have not been to this city in a while, you know that. Now, this is interesting because the article goes on and it says, these and other forces have contributed to the overall drop in the Los Angeles black population from 17% in the 1970s, check this out, and the 1980s to 9.6% in 2010. Can you believe that? The black population has fallen from 17% to 9.6%. Now, there's an author. His name is Earl Afari Hutchison. You've heard of him before. He's a commentator like myself. Though I'm a Christian one, Earl believes in God in some kind of way, but he doesn't deal on the religious side. And he's about my age. And this is what he says. He lives in Windsor Hills now. And he says that he understands why some of the View Park neighbors are sensitive to the arrival of new white residents, including those joggers and dog walkers. Because when I go to my jogging park now, the jogging part is shared with the white joggers who are walking, and it used to be an all black jogging part. I used to go up there all the time. I think I'll go up there. Well, it's supposed to be raining tomorrow, but if I go early tomorrow morning, I should be able to get a walk in there to see if the demographics have changed, if this gentrification hasn't removed me forthwith from this. Now, and this is interesting that Earl speaks about this. This is what he says. He says, "We have so few areas," Earl says, "so little turf that we can call our own. This is yet another invasion of another group coming in to destroy both the culture, the lifestyle, and the economic continuity of our areas." This is very true, because those homes up in View Park and Baldwin Hills have traditionally been black homes, black families, where we send our children to UCLA and SC. But these neighborhoods are turning into white neighborhoods now. And it's a new kind of gentrification. With all these train lines coming in, LA is going through a massive switch. People that are not getting with the program. And this is what is problematic for me, is that a lot of the youngsters cannot find a decent job, decent enough to keep them on the cutting edge. All right, so we're looking at this. It took a group less than a year to hit the fundraising goal of $100,000. What am I talking about? Let me read that. We have so few areas. Then it says, but Conservancy co-founder Andre Gaines says that his group roster of 476 members shows it has a backing of the community. It took the group no less than a year to hit a fundraising goal of $100,000. Some of that money, Gaines said, will pay for the firm Architect Resources Group to complete the documentation needed for the National Register nomination, including maps, photos, and descriptions of each property. See, what they're trying to do is they're trying to make some of these things classic black areas that we can refer back to. Now, when this gentrification comes in and they're modernizing the whole city, this is why the city fathers of Los Angeles knows what they have to do. They have to do this, and they're going to price. You know what my son Mario told me this morning before he went to work? Because he's experiencing it. He's experiencing it. He says it is so expensive. He just got back to Los Angeles from New Orleans. And he said, man, do you know it's almost $2, if not $2, to catch a bus? And then he had left his tap card at home. And he said, what is this? I said, this is the new world that we're living in. It's kind of like a new world order. And if you don't get with that order, and if you don't have the funds for that order, you're going to be left behind. Now, let me tell you how it works for us senior citizens, because there's a few of you senior citizens that still listen to me out there, if you're still alive. And what I mean by senior citizens, if you're 50 and above, you're listening to me, because that's the new scene. 50 is the new 65. You have to look at this, because I'm 70, and I'm telling you, I am beyond senior citizen. I am beyond it. Now, I want to give you a hint. I went to my doctor last Friday, and I told him how I'm living, what I'm eating, and everything. Guess what he told me? I give you a pass gold card. He says, man, whatever you're doing, you keep on doing it. Listen to me. I only eat one major meal a day. Guess what it was yesterday? A little salad. I got a chicken breast that a friend of mine had, sliced it up, had some salad that came in a bag, heated up the chicken, put it on there, put some sauce on there. And what else did I have? Just had some iced tea with that salad. Boom, that's it. This morning I had a cup of coffee, nothing else. Oh, I have my grain bars in the kitchen. I have to go get those to eat. Hey, is anybody in the kitchen? Yeah. Bring me my grain bars. It's on that little thing over there. I forgot to eat my breakfast, but those are that's my grain bars. You don't, thanks, man. Good morning. There's enough protein and nourishment in these four little grain bars that I eat that will hold me captive until lunchtime. You see, I don't need all that. And I smell something cooking in the kitchen, but I don't need that. My cup of coffee, my grain bars, my water, my pills, my fruit juices that I drink. Oh my God. But let me continue to read this with grain bars in my mouth. Okay. Okay, here's one. The firm recently sent out two women carrying laptops and cameras to go house to house gathering information. A few angry residents hurl expletives from their cars. And then it says, there were definitely tense moments, but that's not uncommon. Katie Horrock, a principal of the research group, she said, people get protective of their homes, as they should. Because you see, there's always people coming by here knocking on my door, talking about, do I want to sell? I said, would you please get the hell off my porch? No. We can improve your home. I need some money to improve my home. When I get a little extra money, and I'm saving it up every month, that's why I don't spend my money. I need to do something because it's raining and I think I sprung a leak somewhere. I've been in this house for years. But I would feel upset too if a cavalcade of people came down the street trying to get me to sell my house. In a Facebook discussion of the controversy, one opponent warned the Conservancy that View Park will not be colonized. I am coming at you with full force, they said. Man, they even hired security for funding the event. Williams, a resident who consider her move to View Park as her moment of arrival, carries a three-ring binder bulging with the battles of View Park residents had to fight over the decades. And you have to realize who our city councilman is. Our city councilman is Bernard Parks. Bernard Parks was a black police chief of the LAPD a number of years ago when I worked for the LAPD. I'm looking at a picture right now of me standing up as a chaplain for the LAPD, and Bernard Parks was the chief of police. I think for this webcast, I'll put that picture back up so that you can view it again. So I know what I'm talking about. Bernard Parks is a councilman for this area. And I don't, because these are beautiful homes in View Park. Very nicely built, the neighborhood, trees and everything else. Man, it's beautiful. You should see my street now. When I first moved here, it was bland and blank. And now the Hispanics have moved in. You got palm trees, plants, greenery everywhere. It's beautiful what we're doing to our neighborhood. But every time a home comes up for sale, it usually has some white folk coming in buying these homes. And eventually it's going to marginalize the entire minority community. Because you can't buy a decent home for a decent price in West LA or Santa Monica or, you know. Now in Inglewood, you can still find it because Inglewood is Inglewood. But, all right, let me finish this. She said, Williams, a resident, considered her move to View Park. Fight over decades. She also set up another website, View Park and Arts Cultural Foundation. One page features posters or films that were shot there, including Ray, Love and Basketball, What's Love Got to Do with It, and Something New. Together, the films tell a distinctly African-American story. View Park residents on all sides of the historic designation debate say that such stories make them proud and protective of the place that they call home. I love this. Then it says, you make black people disappear, and it breaks and it breaks the legacy of the next group who earned their way into the community, Williams says. Those pushing for historical designation, she added, are only interested in real estate. They are not looking at people. And the last sentence of the article says, Conservancy members, Cody Parker, who is 72 years young, one of my contemporaries, disagrees. This is what Cody says. The neighborhood's growing diversity, including the influx of young people, is healthy for everyone, she says. There's vibrancy. Every place needs new life and new blood. Now, I'm in agreement with her if this is a good thing. But what happens is that I think that in this terms, black lives do matter, because if there's a nice piece of property on the street in the area where we live, and this is an interesting picture that they have here of View Park here, because when you look at this street, you see white folk and black folk walking all down the street, kids playing together, Spider-Man outfits and everything. It makes for a healthy community, but it changes the view of what used to be black. This is a very interesting article. And Con Ho, thank you very much for bringing this to my attention. It makes for good stuff. Wait, Con put something up. He says, wait a minute, let me let you guys hear this.
It's a very dangerous neighborhood if you don't know what you're doing.
But that's just the reality when people feel threatened and at their home and everything that they know about their lifestyle and what makes their identity.
It's threatened in such a rapid fashion.
I've been here for 72 years, but now it's different.
Oh, this is an interesting news clip of in Oakland. They're talking about the same things. He's putting up these little things. And so I'm going to watch this thing, because this brother's been in his house for 72 years. Okay, so I've spoken 32 minutes, and I think that's enough on this issue. Listen, let me give one final comment. It's unfortunate that the Farrakhan March didn't get the media coverage. I have to respond on that, because when you come against the majority of white Americans with a threat, such as or else, media, nobody wants to cover you, because it is. I wish that Minister Farrakhan had chosen another. Let me see if I can think of another title or something. Another title. Man, I'm so glad he put this thing up here, because, yeah, if he had chosen another title for his march, kind of like justice. Let me think of something that would have worked. Justice towards brotherhood. See? Justice breeds brotherhood. Now that would have been more of a, but when you don't want to come together with another people, and you talk with those other people like you don't want to come together with them, or you have no respect for them at all, you are playing into the hands of a destructive enemy that will inevitably take you out. And that's what happened to the Farrakhan movement. I think it was set back. Even though you had a lot of black people there that poured money into it, that made it happen, I want to read the other reports on the internet and say, how did the crowd behave? Where did they stay? Was there any violence? Did the homicides or the murders go down in Washington, D.C. for the weekend when you had all those black men there from all over the country? I'd like to read all the articles and the reports. Unfortunately, I got philosophy papers to grade, but I'm going to try to read that this weekend. I'm going to try to hone in on this. If you notice that my webcasts are changing a little bit, I am more of a community activist. If you want to follow God on your own. And let me say this, especially in terms of the last webcast that I did, and I left up a couple of days. Christians, a lot of Christians that I know have turned into crackpots, literal crackpots, because they think that they're on the planet all alone, and so they have to self-destruct. I think that this issue of where you living and who's living next door to you is very, very important. Now, I got this old man sitting right in front of me at his house, sitting on his porch, talking about his neighborhood has changed, and so has mine. I want to hear what my black brother has to say. So I'm going to have to say to you folk, thank you for coming to my website and listening to me. And you know what? Whatever you do, you stay into the word. Oh, and let me say this right now. If any of you do not like or care for me, please don't come to my website and listen to these webcasts and make your blood pressure go up, because the doctor told me that my blood pressure is normative for a person my age. And that's the way I'm going to keep it. If you want to fuss and fight and go back and forth, then you need to find an evangelical that gets his jollies from doing that. I'm more apt to looking at what I can do to make my life better for myself, bring a little bit more happiness, joy, and peace. I don't think of the end of the world as around the block, even though it is. And if the planet blows up, I'm just going to blow up with it. If a meteor hits it, I'm out with all the rest of you. So why don't we try to enjoy one another, enjoy this place that God has given us? And for you crazy lunatic Christians out there that are just trying to look for somebody to kick over because your white Jesus, blue-eyed Jesus, blonde-haired Jesus, whatever that is. And I don't know where you got this figment of your imagination. And then you Jew haters, because there's a lot of you evangelicals out there that hate Jews. And you know who I'm talking to. Yeah, I'm talking to you. You're a Jew hater. See, I don't hate anybody. I think that if you really follow God, you love everybody. But if you're a Jew hater, well, then you probably a black hater, too. You probably hate your own self. And that's a terrible way to be. Well, anyhow, you figure that out on your own. Thanks for coming to the website. Let me put this up. Talk to you soon. Whatever you do, you know the drill. Stay in the Word.